Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Bramonte Bryant in for Harold Fisher. Well, they continue to happen. Mass shootings in the U.S. specifically, killings targeting African Americans. 10 murdered at a Buffalo grocery store at the hands of an alleged white supremacist. Officials believe the killings in Buffalo over the weekend were sparked by a conspiracy theory that there is a systematic plan to replace white people throughout the United States with people of color and Jews. But why are African Americans under attack, and is the white supremacist movement being fueled by voices seen as legitimate? That and more, part of our conversation tonight. The phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We'd like to hear from you. Your thoughts on what is happening, the shooting in Buffalo and shootings that have happened previously, gun control, all of that is on the table tonight. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Joining us tonight for this conversation is Mother Eva Doyle. She's an historian and journalist based in Buffalo, New York. And Dr. Gregory Carr, professor with the African American, or head of African American Studies at Howard University. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Mother Eva Doyle, let's begin with you. Give us the latest update on the situation right now in Buffalo.
Well, first of all, our entire community is still grieving. It's a very emotional situation here in our city. The top supermarket and I'm referring to it as our beloved supermarket because it was the only supermarket since 2003 in the African American community. I was a frequent shopper on Saturday. Every Saturday I would be there. Actually, right around the time that the shooting happened, I would have been coming out of that store with my basket of groceries. And it just so happened that on that particular on Saturday, I had a change of plans. And my family, my grandchildren, they were frantically trying to call me. My phone was ringing off the hook, and I didn't know why, because I had not heard about the shooting. And finally, when they got to me, they said, "Grandma, where are you?" I said, "What's going on?" They said, "Are you a Tops?" I said, "No," and that's when they told me about the shooting. I had a change of plans, which I don't usually do. Instead of going shopping at Tops Saturday, I decided to go to the cleaners to pick up some clothing that I had alterated. And that decision, I believe, saved my life.
That's fate.
We are still upset over the 10 lives, decent people, well-known people in our community being shot down, doing what normal people do on a Saturday, shopping for groceries.
Of course, of course. And that's the most upsetting. Any life lost is upsetting, but when you're just doing everyday things and you're thinking
right.
You're just going in and coming back
normal
out.
Activity.
Right. So, Dr. Carr, I had mentioned, first of all, thank you for being with us as usual, Dr. Carr.
Yeah, of course. Thank you. Thank you for the invitation, Bramonte, as always, brother.
And Dr. Carr, I had mentioned this great replacement theory. Sort of expound on that and give our listeners sort of a more in-depth critique on this movement and if that's how you would characterize it.
Oh, it's absolutely a movement. In fact, I think the only way we can... The only question we should ask as a first question is, and before I say anything else, thank God, Mother Doyle, that you weren't there. And I know you knew many of the folks, if not all of them, who were killed or injured. So, you know, all of our hearts are with you and in the community there in Buffalo. The first question I think anyone should ask, being honest, is when have we not been under attack?
Mm-hmm.
The great replacement theory is mainstream, quite frankly. I read the manifesto, Peyton Gendron's manifesto. I forced myself to read it. And while the rhetoric is extreme, the ideas, many of the ideas in them are quite frankly not. They are the ideas that the New York Times did a three-part series at the beginning of this month on Tucker Carlson and the Fox News Channel, which is critiqued, ironically, in Peyton Gendron's manifesto, but nevertheless espouses this great replacement theory. The three-part piece in the New York Times, as you know, and some of the listeners may not know, was called American Nationalist. The great replacement theory, in a sentence, is that white people are in danger from the rising numbers of non-white people in the United States, but not just in the United States, in Europe, everywhere, in fact. There are white people who are the majority in countries. There is a fear stoked by those, whether it be recent candidates like Marine Le Pen in France, whether it be in Hungary, whether it be in Germany, with the rise of extreme right-wing nationalists across Europe, whether it be Bolsonaro in Brazil, and other places. There is this theory that non-whites are coming in, either through immigration or through just frankly giving birth, and that they will ultimately overwhelm the majority white population in the white majority countries of the world. That's in the sentence. And, of course, there's a whole lot more to it.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're focusing tonight on the mass shooting in Buffalo over the weekend, but in a broader sense also talking about the attack on African Americans, especially in regards to these mass shootings. It is not the first, obviously, but it is an ongoing issue. And as Dr. Carr has just profoundly said, has it ever not been an issue? We'd like to hear from you. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Mother Eva Doyle, you had wanted to follow up, Professor
yes,
Carr.
I wanted to add something that I didn't know. I didn't read that, I believe, 180-page manifesto, but my granddaughter called me, and she said, Grandma, do you realize that your street was one of the streets listed in that manifesto? And because now the top supermarket is about a 10-minute ride from my house, and it has been confirmed by our police commissioner that this racist 18-year-old idea was to leave that supermarket, come down our main street in the black community, Jefferson Avenue, and shoot more blacks. And I didn't know my street was one of the streets listed. Let me tell you, that was very upsetting to me. Being a great-grandmother and a person who I'm very active in my community, doing a lot of work, for someone to have in his come over 2 hours, driving 200 miles, coming into our community to attack innocent people because of his racist ideas.
Hmm. Dr. Carr, sort of following up on Ms. Doyle's comments, I want to ask you about, I don't think we can separate sort of the political climate out of this, and you had already sort of started going down that road, but I know that Liz Cheney issued a statement and said the House GOP leadership has enabled white nationalism, and her tweet came out after the shooting in Buffalo. She accused leaders of enabling white supremacy along with anti-Semitism.
Yeah.
Elise Stefanik, I think 2 days after the shooting, basically sort of reiterated that Democrats and liberals are trying to open up borders to bring in more immigrants to create a liberal bloc that will basically take over the United States government and all policy. So now you have a GOP stalwart who was pushed out of leadership, one who took her place, who's now kind of pushing, would you say that replacement theory, but just using different language. So I'm asking it kind of in two parts. And where the political end of this has kind of sparked this conversation or legitimized it? How would you sort of describe what I'm saying?
Absolutely, Bermonte. In fact, I would give Liz Cheney absolutely no credit for her statement. What she should have said, is she was being completely honest and not, you know, attempting to hold in place the shrinking fig leaf in the white national, what I call the White Nationalist Party, which is the Republican Party at this point. She should have said the Republican Party, not the Republican leadership. Mm-hmm. She didn't lead the Republican Party. And, of course, we all know what her father did when he was in office. A lot of veterans who would like to have a word with Dick Cheney. And perhaps even in Geneva, they might want to have him as a war criminal. But at any rate, the politics is very clear. In the manifesto, and you're right, Mother Duell, you can look at that manifesto in basically three parts. The first part is his theory of white replacement. And he says, we got to start having babies, but we also got to start killing people. I picked black people to begin with, but it could have been brown people. He talks about Jews, who he says are ethnically white, but religious and culturally are against the race. They call them race traitors. He names George Soros and others. But the second of the three parts is a surgical description of what he is going to do, literally step by step, beginning with breakfast. And he does name your street, Mother Duell, and a number of other streets. He surgically identified. And in that second section, he also lists all of his equipment with links to where you can purchase the equipment, from the gun to the helmet to the body armor and the ammunition, how he's going to live stream. And then the last section, coming to the political part, Ramonte, he then engages in a critique of conservatism, liberalism. This guy is pro-union. This guy is pro-raising the minimum wage. He says because white people have now been made vulnerable to these non-whites, will take these jobs, these low-paid worker jobs, and are going to flush white people out of the country in terms of the numbers. Well, how does that tie to the White Nationalist Party, the Republican Party? Every member of the Republican Party has either been silent or tried to distance themselves from a subset of that party as if it is distinguishable, and it is not. Donald Trump, as he announced, as we know, in New York, talking about Mexican rapists and criminals, this is the rhetoric of the contemporary Republican Party. Every member of it. Liz Cheney is not without blame here. Now, if they're going to try to posture and try to act as if somehow that any member of that party is without blame, well, that's utterly absurd. And the reason that does speak out is because they want to win the elections beginning with 2020 to midterms and, in their minds, 2024 presidential election. They're not going to condemn. They're not going to condemn this action.
They'll just ignore it.
They have to ignore it. In fact, in the manifesto, this is what this boy says. He says, I will be captured. Hopefully I won't be killed. And if I'm not killed, then I will, in fact, spend the rest of my life in prison and drain the government of its resources because we need to implode the state. Today, U.S. Representative Republican Lee Zeldin and candidate for governor of New York, Andrew Giuliani, yes, that son of the former mayor of New York, both came out and said the death penalty in New York should be reinstated. So what you said, Bermonte, is clearly there. Politically, they're trying to make hay of this already because we know, of course, on a no-brainer like this, and there is a federal death penalty, of course, separately, but on a no-brainer like this, if people say, okay, let's reinstate the death penalty, who do you think the death penalty is going to be used against when it's not Peyton Gendron? So they're trying to make political hay on this already, and the gun smoke has increased.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before we take a quick break, let's get in a call. Kathy is calling from Largo. Go right ahead, Kathy, with your question or comment.
Okay, just more of a comment, and I do appreciate being picked up here, and thank you for everybody on the line. And I just wanted to add that fear and desperation breeds a blame game. And unfortunately, we have a lot of folks with this white supremacy, white nationalism, that want to blame their woes in life on people of color versus dealing with the character of what we're dealing with. And we have to actually go back to the shooter in this case in Buffalo, who had an incident, I believe it was last year when he was in high school, making threats. They found him to be credible. He was picked up. However, that's where the judicial system stopped. if they had actually did some type of intervention even then, maybe these plans, maybe this 180-something page manifesto would have been found and these plans would have been identified. It's unfortunate for anyone to look at what they don't have and blame it on a Mexican, blame it on a black person, African-American community. And we have to understand that we even see it on that political level.
Right.
It is so unfortunate. We have people in that grocery store that passed away that were in the prime of their life, retirees, that are just sitting down and they should never have to worry.
Thank you so much, Kathy. I know we have to take a quick break. Mother Eva Doyle, I wanted to thank you so much for joining us. All the best to you, the community in Buffalo. I lived and worked in Buffalo for a couple of years. And so our best to your community, and we are thankful that fate at least saved you. So thank you so much for being with us.
Yes, and thank you for inviting me, and I appreciate the invitation. So is that the end for me?
Well, we thank you so much. If you want to hang around, you can feel free to do so. You can stay on the line. And hang on. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll come back. Don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com, or you can download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. If you're on the phone line, stay right there, Tony. We will get to you. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141. 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. The original Quiet Storm with John Mons is next on 96.3 WHUR. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. This is the Insight segment. Tonight we were talking about the shooting, the mass shooting in Buffalo, New York over the weekend, but we're also talking in a broader sense what has fueled that mass shooting and especially targeting African Americans. We're just getting some insight on that. Phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Mother Eva Doyle, you wanted to add a comment?
Yes, I want to ask you something, Dr. Carr. You have a lot of insight. Something happened in Black History Month that was historical at the Tops Market. I was invited to do a book signing there on a book of what I call pure African history. I'm trying to figure out if there was any connection because it was widely advertised. And because I was there doing that, and I was talking, and maybe I'm maybe exaggerating or overthinking this, do you think there was any connection with me? Because I was listed on my address, not my address, but my street, was prominently listed in that manifesto. Do you think there was some connection there?
Ms. Doyle, I think absolutely. We know that the store was targeted. We know that much. We know in the document that he identified the zip code 14208 because he said that was the highest percentage of black people in one zip code close enough to where he lives, about 3 miles, 3 hours away. So he'd also cased the market. He was there the day before. He said there's one or two on at least the day before, according to Buffalo News, just reported that. And Vermont, she saw that the store manager, one of the managers, was asked to leave. They,
mm-hmm.
they only got one or two security guards. He identified the weapons they had. So I don't know that he would have had your name specifically, but the same reason that you were there having a conversation during February Black History Month about black history was, in fact, the same general reason he identified Tops Market because it's just that black. Yes, I would say that is no coincidence.
Thank you for that. I won't hold you. I just wanted to, because I was thinking about that. I was wondering if there could have been some kind of connection. But thank you, Dr. Carr, and I won't hold you all, and I appreciate the invitation. And thank you so much for your program.
And thank you so much for being with us. Mother Eva Doyle, historian and journalist in the Queen City, Buffalo, New York. And the best to you and all of the residents of Buffalo. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's go back to the phone lines. And Tony calling from Bowie. Go right ahead, Tony.
Thank you for having my taking my call. I believe that this was initiated probably by our politicians not taking measures to pass certain gun laws. And nobody's questioned yet, at least I haven't heard, him being 18. And I believe, isn't the legal age to own a gun 21?
I think it depends on the state.
Okay. Well, I think this all stems from what happened to Kenosha. This guy gets off, and then he's praised by the Republicans. And then the young guys, they see this as a way of making a name for themselves. And I think we should start holding their parents accountable. Because how did this guy, 18 years old, they knew that he had guns. They knew that he had so-called mental problems. And they did nothing. They said nothing. I think we need to start holding them accountable every time.
Right.
And then, you know what else? Let me add one more thing.
Very quickly.
When they sent to prison, don't allow them to have visits their whole sentence.
All right, Tony. Tony is going strong here. Dr. Carr, after these shootings, right, and I've always said, after those shootings at Sandy Hook with those little children, terrible, but then you add they were little white children. If there was no legislation that they would put through then, I just couldn't see it ever happening. Can you see any scenario where there will be some kind of legislation that have tougher restrictions on these gun laws? We saw just in California, I think a couple of weeks ago, an appeals court, a 2-1 ruling where they sort of threw out this case saying that you could not, you couldn't put restrictions of, I guess, having to be 21 to purchase an assault weapon. They said it was counter to the Second Amendment. So what does it take? I know it's the same question we have after all of these shootings, but I think it's worth asking, is there a point where legislation could move through to change things, or do you have to change the people?
Well, you know, as a Bramante man, that last combination of that phrase you asked, do you have to change the people? There's the reason why the answer to that is no, there's not going to be any federal legislation. This country, as we know, of course, is a settler colony. And he even writes about that. He says, basically, the Native Americans got a raw deal, but white people are here now, so he can't reverse it.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, reading this is stunning because, you know, he's lucid in a lot of these things, and a lot of stuff is immature, it's rant, but then some of this stuff is bedrock right-wing talking points that none of them would disagree with. The reason there will never be legislation is that if they're not going to change the rules of the United States Senate, which require basically 60 votes to get legislation passed, 50 plus a tiebreaker if the Democrat has the chair of the Senate, may do with the vice president now, to even suspend debate, then you're not going to get legislation passed, and there will never be 60 Democratic votes. Why? Well, I won't say there never be. It'll be very difficult. Why? A little something called the Electoral College. So the very state of California that you just evoked, if you're voting in the state of California, your vote counts hundreds of times less than someone voting in Wyoming, because California has two senators and so does Wyoming. The Electoral College has fixed it so that there won't be legislation passed because the white nationalists have too many states where they can block it. As a result, Samuel Alito, appointed by George Bush, who lost the popular vote in the presidential election of 2000 and probably lost the state of Florida, if not the partisan Secretary of State down there, and the three justices appointed by Donald Trump, who lost the popular vote, they are poised to, in the very state of New York, they're hearing a case this term in the Supreme Court where they're going to very likely ease open carry laws in the state of New York. So basically, you can walk around with a gun in your hip in Manhattan. So, no. This is not going to be a reversal. And the only thing I would say is that this year, just in the 19 weeks of 2022, There have been 198 mass shootings in the United States of America. Mass shootings being defined as four or more people shot. Now, in 2021, there were 693. In 2020, COVID, 611. And in 2019, 417. The number keeps going up because the rhetoric is just getting superheated. People are out there. Of 127 mass shootings that were looked at in higher numbers, I forget the name of the think tank that did this. I was looking at some numbers. 68 of the 127 mass shooters were white, 20 were black, and 10 were Latinx, and then some other folks.
Yeah, I think
white folk doing this.
Yeah, I think it was Statista or something like that. I think the site you might be talking about.
Yes.
And we can get back to that issue too, because when you do see a shooter of color, we are surprised. I gotta say, you're surprised because the norm has been it is a white citizen that is doing these mass shootings for a variety of reasons. Now, we saw what happened in California over the weekend, a gentleman of Chinese descent, but he had some political issues with China and Taiwan and those kind of issues. But we'll kind of try to stay focused here on this. Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Omar calling from D.C. Go right ahead, Omar.
Yes, hi. Thanks so much for taking my call. This is really tragedy that it's happening. Gun laws, they're not going to change them. They're not going to change them because the gun lobby is very strong. And this whole notion that we're going to continue to have this happen, we got to protect ourselves. You know, every supermarket needs to have a guard, you know. In Kentucky.
Well, they had a guard in Buffalo. And he shot the suspect, but he had on body armor, so his bullets didn't affect it, and that guard ended up being killed.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I didn't know that, and I apologize. But
no, that's okay.
The thing is that as far as replacing, we're not replacing anybody. We are 13% of the population. Okay. They know who's really going to replace them in this country. Okay. And they just not dealing with it. Them Hispanic are the one going to replace them. But this is tragedy. This just reminds me Emmanuel Church, you know, incidents. You know, so we just have to continue to pray, and we just gotta. I believe that you gotta protect. Everybody gotta get a gun to protect themselves nothing's changing.
Thank you so much, Omar. And Dr. Carr, we see that these shootings are happening too, where these gunmen know where African Americans are gathering, and you know, Dylan Roof gets arrested. They take him to Burger King. This young man puts a gun up to his neck. He's not shot by police. He's allowed to really pull the gun back down. And if you so really walk yourself through that, you can see he's got the gun. And if he pulls it down, does a policeman know he's not going to pull it down and actually fire at them? So some of the conversation now, and I'm wondering what you think, if it's worth commenting on or a conversation, would, if that person had been a person of color, would he or she have had the opportunity to bring that gun down from their neck, or would they have been automatically shot? I mean, what's your thought? Does that mean anything? What happened with that?
We know the answer. We know the answer is they would have been slaughtered. If a manifesto, and this boy gave a literal tick-tock from the time he left his house at 7:30 in the morning until he got out of his car in that parking lot. He gave a tick-tock of what he was going to do, what he was going to do, where he was going to post it, how he was going to stream it, the manifesto dropped, all of that. Had that been a black person going to a white neighborhood, first of all, they might have been intercepted because this was posted as he was on route. And, of course, he would have been slaughtered. And my friend Gerald Horn, the academic, often says that whiteness in many ways is the battle pig. The white elites kind of extended to poor whites to enable them to continue to exploit by making sure the working class never got together. Well, every white person in the country is a potential deputy law enforcement officer. When Kyle Rittenhouse gets in his car in one state, drives to another state, slaughters white people, and isn't shot. In fact, get water from the police to let you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the Buffalo police, of course, doing a fine job, cracked an old white man's skull open and got away with it.
Mm-hmm.
So no, I have no doubt in my mind that, of course, anyone would have been killed.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about the Buffalo Mass shooting where 11 were shot, 10 were killed. African-Americans were targeted. The alleged shooter had specifically driven from his home in New York to Western New York in Buffalo, targeting that specific grocery store, targeting that specific community, knowing that it was about 80% African-American. And again, shoots and kills 10 people. Our guest is Dr. Gregory Carr. He's the professor and chair of the Afro-American Studies at Howard University. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're going to take a quick time out. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with Dr. Carr and you. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. This is the Insight segment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. This is the Insight segment. Dr. Carr, I know we only have a few more moments with you, but before you leave us, I wanted to ask you this. You had said something very early, and you had talked about reading this alleged manifesto from Peyton Gendron, and you said you read it. You said, but I think you used the word, you said it was difficult, but you read it anyway. And as a longtime professor who has read a lot, I've seen your office and all the books, and I've heard your stories about how you have even more in storage. So you've read some heavy stuff in your time. Why was it difficult for you to read?
Well, I think probably, Brother Bramante, for the same reason it's difficult for you to cover this story as a longtime journalist and for all of us, because we are not safe, brother. We have never been safe in this country. But this isn't 1859. Mm-hmm. As the Civil War is getting ready to brew, we see John C. Calhoun on the floor of the United States Senate inventing the filibuster in part because of the white supremacists. This isn't even Oklahoma City, where those black and brown babies, in addition to other babies, died as Timothy McVeigh and his partner bombed the Federal Center and his own manifesto referring to another document, the Turner Diaries. This isn't the Unabomber. This is May 2022. And unlike those other instances, with the possible exception of John C. Calhoun, the rhetoric in this document mirrors the rhetoric of the former president of the United States, a majority of Republicans in the House of Representatives and the United States Senate. In fact, there are campaign talking points in this document. And there are political talking points that are aired every night on Fox News out of the mouths of people like Sean Hannity and certainly Tucker Carlson. I think that's why it's difficult, because we don't understand where we live. This boy says, I'm a regular white guy. He said, I'm not a hero. He writes this. He says, in fact, he says he was radicalized during COVID when he went online and started reading this stuff. He says, I don't believe in the afterlife. I don't think I'm going anywhere after this. He said, I hope I don't kill any law enforcement officials because I believe that they are doing the best they can. In other words, I'm with them. They are with me. The things that have been difficult for me is reading line by line. So much of it is familiar, Bramante. And it's the stuff you cover every day, brother. And it's out in the ugly light of day, and it's costing us our lives.
He is Dr. Gregory Carr. He is the chair of African-American Studies at Howard University.
No, former chair. I rotated out. I've been promoted to the faculty.
Uh-oh. Okay. And you sound like you're happy about that, as long as the check keeps coming, right, Dr. Carr?
Yes, sir, brother. Happy. I can go out and do some work now. No more deals with me.
I hear that. Dr. Gregory Carr. Dr. Carr, always a pleasure to have you with us, and your profound expertise and your comments always helps move our conversation along, and more importantly, informs us and tells us something we hadn't known before. So always enjoy having you on and getting a chance to chat with you.
Always, brother. Well, keep going, brother. Glad to always be with you. And again, my sympathy with yours to all the folk in Buffalo and to you, brother, because I'm sure quite a number of people you worked with and people you know there, of course, have been affected directly or indirectly by this. So good to be again here with you again, brother, even under the circumstances.
All right. Thank you so much, Dr. Carr. Appreciate it. Have a great night.
You too.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're going to continue this conversation. Joining us now is Dr. Sherese Nelson. She's a political analyst. Dr. Nelson, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I truly appreciate it.
Before you and I start chatting, I want to go back to the phone line because we've had Leonard waiting for a few moments. So let's try to squeeze him in. Calling from Long Island, or Long Island, as they like to say up there. Go right ahead, Leonard, with your question or comment. Still there, Leonard? And we might have lost Leonard. So, Leonard, give us a call back or open up your phone line, and we'll get to you. Dr. Nelson, always difficult conversations. And I had talked to Dr. Carr, you know, about the political implications of what's going on. You know, Liz Cheney basically saying that the GOP is enabling white nationalism. And Dr. Carr says Liz Cheney doesn't have a whole lot of legs to stand on here. You know, she should talk about the Republicans in general. And Elaine Stefanik is coming out saying basically the Democrats are trying to open up the borders to bring in all of these illegal immigrants to change the voting bloc. So from a political standpoint, in the New Yorker, great article, folks, I recommend reading it, American Racism and the Buffalo Shooting. And they talk about sort of the undergirding of this from the Republican Party and the Trump presidency and his taking over the party. What say you about the political sort of undertones that have helped carry this, you know, replacement theory, this white supremacy movement? Would you see the two, political and this white supremacy movement, moving hand in hand?
Well, I speak about this directly in my book, The Congressional Black Caucus, 50 Years of Fighting for Equality. And what I state there is that white supremacy is the framework in which this country was built. If you are familiar with the history, you would know there's a book called 13 Clocks, which talks about how you got all 13 colonies to strike all at the right time against Native Americans and blacks to create the country that we know today. So this idea that there are political implications, no, white supremacy is built into the fabric of the nation. And what has happened over time is that we have built a two-party system that then talks about fighting against that white supremacy. And what we're seeing right now, I think, with the GOP is that they have no longer... They have left, walked away from the guise of fighting against that, or even fighting for some level of equity with conservative values, and have all and out said, yes, we are white supremacists, and yes, we are here to take our country back, and we have had the power structure for over 200 years and created it to then suit our interests. And now that democracy is no longer suiting our interests, we are okay with an autocracy. And then we will create theories that then justify our need for power.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about the Buffalo mass shooting. What sort of fueled it? Where do we go from here with this issue and the political, the social, even the economic ramifications of this kind of violence that is happening, and especially as it is targeting African-Americans? Let's go back to the phone lines. And Kadia is calling from Northwest D.C. Go right ahead with your question or comment.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I just wanted to say that I think we have to keep ensuring that we are specific in saying that this was an act of anti-black racism, and it's this gunman's anti-black hatred that drove him to commit this crime. He literally had the N-word written on his gun, as well as "Here's your reparations," I believe. So yes, gun control is very important, but we have to remember that over the years, white supremacists used whatever means that they could to kill black folks based on their hatred. So that's all I have to say.
Well, thank you, Kadia. And I'm glad that you added that point about him having the N-word written on his gun, because I meant to mention that, and how you brought that up, and how he allegedly sort of bypassed white people as he went into the supermarket. I think maybe two white folks were shot, and that might have just been sort of collateral damage, but he had literally walked past them. So we know that he was targeting African Americans. And Dr. Nelson, I think what struck some folks is often law enforcement is hesitant to come right out and say, you know, these were racist attacks. They may wait a little while and see what they can find out. But you saw it on the day of the shooting. So is that also in some ways not just by the evidence that they have, because even when they have it, they still take a little while to go through it and make sure he wrote it. Does this say something about where even law enforcement now is sort of waking up to the fact of like, yeah, it's pretty clear what's going on here, and we don't really have to wait a long time to tell the folks this is what's happening. Are we at that point now where there doesn't have to be a whole lot of discussion on what these attacks are really about, whether he wrote a manifesto or not?
Well, let me say this. We have a history in this country of making white violence and white men who commit that violence sympathetic figures,
mm-hmm.
right? If you think about even how the news has reported him, he's a teenager. Right. A teenager.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Whereas, you know, we see that in other cases when black young men are perpetrators of crimes, never of this level, they're called it's the black man. Right. So this idea of do we need to still discuss it? The overall understanding of what the liberties a white male has in this country are so broad that it has to consistently be talked about. It has to be consistently talked about that we are okay with excusing away of sanitizing white male violence so that then there is this objectivity that is supposed. Well, it's not too objective. He decided that he was going to commit this crime on a gaming streaming site called Twitch or Twitter or what Twitch, I think, is the name of the platform. So the idea of alleged to me is ridiculous when he logged in under his name then to stream this live. So, yes, we have to continuously have conversations about the idea and the fact that we are willing to coddle white men and violence in a way that no one else in this country gets that level of coddling.
I think also what is particularly disturbing here, and the same way at the Mother Emanuel Church, is the number of elderly people who were also killed. And I'm wondering if that will add any sort of dimension, any other disgust, any other movement on this. My guess is no, in terms of reactions, in terms of any kind of legislation that will come forth. Dr. Carr says he doesn't see any legislation happening anywhere in the near future. Would you agree in our last minute?
Oh, yeah, no problem. No, there's not any legislation. I'll never forget being pregnant with my now 9-year-old son when the Sandy Hook shooting
mm-hmm.
happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I was devastated. And I remember my son's father saying, "Why are you so upset?" And I said, "Because if we cannot get gun legislation passed after someone murdered little white kids,
mm-hmm.
we're talking about white elementary school kids, then who and what is going to save my son?"
Yeah, well, you and I basically had the same thought, and you hate to sort of frame it in that manner, but that's an acknowledgement of, you know, the history of this nation, and that's real. She is Dr. Sherese Nelson, political analyst. Dr. Nelson, if folks wanted to get in touch with you, how can they do so?
I am a professor at Southern University, so they can reach out to the institution and find me, and they can always follow me on social media at Dr. DRJANAYE on Twitter.
All right. We love Southern University and we love Louisiana. I've got those roots, so we thank you for being with us, Dr. Nelson.
Thank you so much.
That's the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141 for this Monday, May 16th. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. Have a good night.